Okay, good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Talmud is daf Chav Tes. We're a little bit behind. We're back on the. We're finishing up from the last perek. So we are on Chav Ches Amud Beis 28b, and where do we find ourselves? We finished the Mishnah. We're up to the Gemara. Okay. So just a little bit to finish up from the first parak, and then we begin the second parak. The Mishnah that we just did described our early morning routine in the Beis HaMikdash. So they woke up in the morning, just as a quick review, they woke up early in the morning, the Kohanim who were sleeping in the Beis HaMokad, or the Kohanim who were guarding the Beis HaMokad, and then what they would do is they would do a Sivuv. They would do an examination, an inspection of the Azara. So if you remember yesterday, the Mishnah described how they came out of the Beis HaMokad. There was like a little side door. The Mishnah described as a pishpesh. And they went into the Azara. There were two groups of them. One turned to the right and the other one turned to the left. Now remember, this picture that you're looking at above me is upside down. So north is down. So in other words, they're coming from that big room on the bottom, the Beis HaMokad. Now the one who would go right and the one who would go left would both have torches. It was still early, early in the morning, well before sunrise, well before dawn. And they would do it, each one would circle. One would circle clockwise, and the other one would be circling counterclockwise. And where would they meet up? So the Lishkas HaChavitim. Lishkas HaChavitim is right next to the Nicanor Gate. The Nicanor Gate is the main entrance on the east. And we're looking from the inside. It was on the right side of the Nicanor Gate. If you're going inside, so obviously it's going to be to the left side. And that's where they would meet. It does seem like the people who made a right-hand turn have more to walk. Okay, it does seem that way. So, and then they would meet by the Chavitim, and they knocked on the door of the Chavitim, and apparently somebody was inside, and they said, okay, time to make the Chavitim. Chavitim were the mincha that was offered by the Kohen Gadol daily. We'll talk more about that later on. Okay, and then afterwards, then you had the Trumas Hadeshen, the first avoda that was done in the early morning. Trumas Hadeshen was assigned to one Kohen. That one Kohen who was assigned was chosen by lottery. You remember yesterday how we had a discussion about how that Kohen was chosen. Originally, it was a foot race up the ramp in order to decide. That didn't go so well. So they moved systems, and they went to the system of lottery. So every Kohen who wanted to do it would first tovel in the mikvah, stand in the Beis HaMokad, there would be a lottery, and the lottery would determine and would decide which Kohen would be doing the Trumas Hadeshen. Everybody now, all the parties who went out into the Azara the early morning are now standing by the Lishkas of the Chavitim, which is, again, right next to the Nicanor Gate. And now we'd be sending one Kohen, the determined Kohen, the winner of the lottery, would now be doing the Trumas Hadeshen. So what would he do? So we reminded him, remember, first you got to wash your hands and feet. Okay, it's interesting that the Mishnah told us that we had to remind him. You have to wash your hands and feet. So he's going to go now to the other side of the ramp, and he's going to be out of visibility from these Kohanim, and he'll be washing his hands and feet. How did they know that he was washing his hands and feet? So you remember, there was a muchni, there was some sort of mechanical wheel that he had to turn in order to get the water. We'll talk more about the muchni at a later point in time. He washed his hands and feet, and then he would do the Trumas Hadeshen. He'd take a shovel. The shovel was located right on the side of the ramp, on the west side of the ramp. And he would take the shovel. He would walk up the ramp. He would take one shovelful of ashes. You remember the Mishnah described, he would move the exterior and he would go right to the heart of the ashes. He would take one shovelful of ashes, come down from the ramp. Now he would make two left-hand turns. Right now at the bottom of the ramp, he would now make a left and he would make an immediate left. Where now he's going up the side of the ramp. Remember the Mishnah described he would be walking 10 amos along the side of the ramp and he would deposit the ashes 10 amos from the base of the ramp, 3 tfachim away from the ramp. Behinicham sham. One of the miracles that occurred in the Beis HaMikdash is that he never had to worry about it again. Meaning that it just kind of absorbed into the ground. The Mishnah doesn't describe that, but I get that information elsewhere. I forget where I get that information from, but that's one of the miracles that takes place.
Is it one of the ten?
I think it is.
Perkei Avos, no?
Yeah, but the Mishnah Perkei Avos doesn't actually list.
They don't list it.
Mishnah Perkei Avos just tells us 10, right? Think about the Nisyonos of Avram Avinu. The Mishnah says they're 10, and that's
right,
it.
Right.
And then what are they? Machlokas. So you can imagine. The Rambam, on that machlokas of Avram and the Tenesionos, so the Rambam only counts those that are actually mentioned in Chumash. Meaning, if it comes to us via Medrash, the Rambam won't count it. Not because it doesn't count, just simply because the Rambam doesn't count it. Rashi is the one who goes to Midrashim and, you know, and the Kivshana Eish, Rashi will count that, and Rashi will count the ones that come via Midrashim. Anyway, okay, I took a little bit of a detour. Okay, now we are... Yeah. Okay, and then he deposited, and that's where we left off. Meaning the Trumas Hadeshen now has been performed. Trumas Hadeshen, if you want to look at it more globally, Trumas Hadeshen is almost like the bridge between yesterday's avoda and today's avoda. Meaning, what is Trumas Hadeshen? Right, all the ashes of all the carbonates that were burned yesterday. So we're not taking all of its ashes. It's a mitzvah. I'm going to use the word ceremonial, so it's not ceremonial, it's a mitzvah. But it's almost like ceremonially, like we're finishing yesterday's avoda, we're depositing it next to the ramp, and now we are ready for a new day of avoda. It's like the bridge between one day and the next. So that's where the Mishnah has left us off, and then in terms of the continuation of the story, we'll continue when we start the new perek, which will be in just a couple minutes from now. But we have a little bit of Gemara to do. The Gemara's got a couple of loose ends it wants to tie up in our Mishnah. We start with the Gemara. Now, one of the things that we described is that when they were making their inspection of the Azara in the early morning, so they walked around the perimeter, the inner perimeter of the Azara. The Mishnah described how there was a porch going all the way around. Now, Achsadra is the word that the Mishnah uses. Now, when we talk about a porch, so basically everyone have a good picture of the bungalows up in the mountains. So when you talk about a porch, you're talking about two wood poles and then something over the top of it. Okay, simple porch.
That was it?
All the way around, the entire inner perimeter. You don't see it in this picture. The picture here is the schematic. But basically, all the way around. Actually, yeah, you do. Right, this area over here is just like a porch running all the way around the inner perimeter. To which the Gemara is going to be bothered by a technical question, a very technical question. You can't have a porch in the Azara. Now, in order to make up a porch, so it's made up of wood. You're not allowed to have wood in the Beis HaMikdash. Really? The Gemara says, "Umi have achsajas ba'azara ba'atanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Minayin, she'inos in achsara ba'azara." The Braisa asks straight out, you're not allowed to have an achsajra in the Azara. Where? How do I know this? Tamar Lomar, lo sitalecha ashera kol eitz o mizbach Hashem Elokecha. Beginning of Parsha Shoftim, very beginning. You're not allowed to plant an ashera. Now an ashera is an idolatrous tree. So that we all get, meaning right next to the mizbech. I mean, you're not allowed to plant an idolatrous tree anywhere. Right, so it's not limited to the Beis HaMikdash, but kol eitz. But then the Torah goes on and says, any tree. So, hachi kamar, so the Gemara says, this is how you read the pasuk, lo sita lecha ashera, right? The lo sita, the law, the negative prohibition, is really going to be double-dipped. Lo sita lecha ashera, don't plant an ashera tree. That's understood. And lo sita lecha kol eitz. Eitz on mizbach Hashem Elokecha, and non-eitz as well. Meaning trees are not allowed. Why that should be? Okay, that's Tameha Mitzvahs. I don't have a good one for us this morning in terms of why that should be. But it's not. In other words, you're not allowed to plant any tree. Now, I understand that when you're making a porch and you're just putting wood poles, you're not really planting them. But the Gemara assumes that really it's no different. Meaning, what you're just simply not allowed to use wood as construction material for the Azara and for the Beis HaMikdash.
Which Mizbech was made out of wood?
No, what?
The Aron
was made out of wood. Right.
Huh?
Shulchan was made, right. But all that was plated with gold. That doesn't help, but in other words, okay. Anyway, so lozit alacha asherah, but in terms of construction and building, so you can't use wood. So lozit alacha kol eitz, it's a mizbach Hashem Elokecha, amar av chista, bachsar shishol binyan. So Rav Chista answers very simply, fine. So we're just going to change our assumption. We assume that these porches that were all around the interior of the Azara were made up of wood. They weren't. They were made up of stone. Okay, good. Simple question, simple answer. Now, here the Gemara, we knocked on the door of the Chavita and we said, okay, time to get going. Meaning you had to prepare the Minchas Chavita. Now, they prepared it that early in the morning. That's not the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question is a question of priority. what's done first? Meaning, of all the karbanos that are offered in the morning, the tamid shel shachar is number one. In fact, that's where we're going. That's where we're headed in this mesechta. We're going to get to the karban tamid. That's the name of the mesechta. Right. So we're going to get to the karban tamid. Now, nothing can be offered before the karban tamid. How do I know that? The Gemara quotes a drasha, tamalomar, va'arach alea ha'ola. The hey, the ola, or the definitive article. So Amarava ha'ola, ola rishona, meaning this is it. This has got to be the first thing that you do every morning. So how can we start with the minchas chavitin before doing the karban ola? So Amar Yehuda, ola hachem chamel revicha. So Rav Yehuda says, now this is just preparation. We're just telling the people that are in the lishka the chavitin, meaning it's morning. I know you don't see it because it's really dark outside, but it's morning, and start heating up the water. Part of the minchas chavitim is that particular mincha is scalded in water like a bagel. Okay, so so you just have to heat up the water and don't wait till later because you want the water already hot by that point in time. So start heating it up right now. Those were the instructions that were given to the people who were in that lishka at that hour in the morning. Hajlach b'shoshim akamos. That is the end of the first parak, and now we move immediately to the second parak. It's just a continuation. We're now going to continue the story of the Karban Tamid. So where are we at? Where are we right now? We're finished with the Trumas Hadeshen. He's coming down from the ramp. Let's be even more specific. And now the Mishnah picks it up from here. Re'u Achav Shiyarad. So now they see him, meaning the one Kohen who was doing the Trumas Hadeshen, they see him coming from the ramp. Now, who are the spectators over here? Obviously the Kohanim. It says Achav, his brethren. So it's a reference to the Kohanim. But I can envision that the Mishnah here is talking about two different groups, meaning, remember, we do have a group of people who are standing right by the Lishkas HaChavitin. They were the ones who finished the inspection of the Azara, and they were the ones who instructed this one Kohen, remember, wash your hands, wash your feet, right? So maybe the Mishnah is referring to them, or the Mishnah could be referring to all the remaining Kohanim who were in the Beis HaMokad. It's not clear. It's not clear who the Mishnah is actually referring to, but okay. And now they're running, right? You're going to see all the adjectives we use to describe the Kohanim. It's going to be fast moving. Kohanim move. They don't sit around. The kishu yedem v'raglem. Now they wash their hands and their feet. Menakior from the whatever the English word is. Laver.
Okay.
I understand. It sounds better when you say it. Not Louis a magrefos vested sinoros. Now they took magrefa and sinoros, different instruments, tools, shovels, pitchforks, rakes. Now they go to the top of the mizbech. Now what are they going to find on the top of the mizbech? So a pile of ashes,
right.
And or they're also going to find some of the limbs of yesterday's karbanos that didn't totally burn. Okay. Meaning, obviously, the purpose is to burn them on the top of the Mizbech, but not everything is going to get burnt. Now, here's the challenge. Meaning, they want to set up the top of the Mizbech. Okay? But those limbs, they can't take off the Mizbech. Why not? Because once you take those off the Mizbech, now they're subject to the disqualification of Lina. Meaning, they were supposed to be burned yesterday, they were given overnight to be burnt, and now it's a new day in the Beis HaMikdash. So now, if they're taken off the Mizbech, now the Mizbech provides for them sanctuary. And I mean that over here figuratively. But in other words, legally. In other words, as long as the limbs are on top of the Mizbeach, they're not going to be disqualified by Lina. Okay. Once you take them off the Mizbeach, done and done. Meaning I can't put them up on the Mizbeach because those were yesterday's Karbanos. So we want to move them to the side, set everything up for today, and then put them back up. So where are we going to put them? So the Mishnah describes. So all the limbs and all the fats of yesterday's karbanos that weren't totally consumed, solkin osan al tzide hamizbech. We move into the side of the mizbech. Now, im ein tzade machzikim. Now, if there's just simply not enough room, so jin osan b'soveiv. And now we have in our Mishnah al hakevish, or if you would like vi al hakevish. You could put them on the sovev, or you could put them on the ramp. Right? Sovev is a ledge going around the Mizbeach, and the ramp, of course, is that large ramp that goes up to the Mizbeach. They have Mizbeach status. So if I move them to the ledge, or if I move them to the ramp, they are still going to be under the confines of the Mizbeach. And so therefore they will not be disqualified. Now, what's left now, once we removed yesterday's limbs that weren't burnt, is we're left with a pile of ashes. So what do? We start off by setting up the ashes. So malim be'efra agav tapuach, tapuach haya be'emtza ha-mizbeach. The ashes were placed in the very center of the mizbeach. Now, this is not, the ashes may or may not be hot. Almost not the point. The ashes were just simply the ashes of yesterday's karbanos. We moved them into the mizbeach. You're going to see all the time they're called tapuach. They're called an apple. Okay? That's just simply because it's shaped like an apple. It was like a mound. And it was round. They basically heaped the ashes of one large pile, so it looked like a big apple in the center of the mizbeach. Now, sometimes there was so much ashes, it took up the volume of 300 kor. Okay. Nearly impossible to imagine. In fact, it's so nearly impossible to imagine that the Gemara's response to this Mishnah is guzma. That's an exaggeration. 300 kor is just too much. A kor is 30 sa'ah, and how do we put 30 sa'ah into...
Here it says
1,296,000
eggs.
Eggs. Okay. Yeah, that's...
A lot of chicken.
Yeah. Okay. In other words, let's say like this. There was a lot of ashes on the top of the Mizbeach. Okay, that's a... Uvirigalim lo hayu medash noso mimneshu noyla Mizbeach. Now, on Yantiv, you can imagine there's a lot. Meaning... Even though we just described that sometimes this could be as much as 300, on Yontif, there is all the Musafim, all the Karbanos of all the individuals that are making Aliyah L'Regel, I should say, right? Different type of Aliyah, but same basic idea, moving up in Kedusha. Aliyah L'Regel, so all the people who are making Aliyah L'Regel have to bring their Olath Re'iyah, they bring their Shami Chagiga, they bring their Shami Simcha, right? All the Karbanos that happen on Yontif. So you can imagine on Yontif there was a ton of ashes, and the Mishnah here describes we like that, meaning it's nice to show off how many karbanos are brought on Yontif. So they kept them there on Yontif. Umiyamav lo nisatzal kol matzias adeshin. Now during their days, not really sure what the Mishnah is trying to teach us over there. Umiyamav during their days lo nisatzal kol matzias adeshin. Kohanim were never lazy. Meaning, it never was an issue. Never was an issue of Kohanim being lazy. So on Yontif, when you see a large pile of ashes on the Mizbeach, no one ever thinks to themselves, like, is anyone taking care of this over here? Meaning, that doesn't run through people's minds, because that's not the Midah of the Kohanim. Kohanim are just simply not lazy people. So on Yontif, when you see a big pile of ashes, you know that was deliberately left there to show off all the Karbanos that are brought in Yontif. We're now on the top of Chavtetz Amad Aleph. We're still going through the Mishnah. I mean, it's just, everything is just lumped together as one big Mishnah over here. Hechelo ma'alu b'gzirin l'sadya samaracha. Now, we got to make our bonfires. Bonfires on the Mizbeach. So, just a quick introduction before we actually get into the nitty-gritty, into the details. Okay, look, we need a fire. We need a fire on the Mizbeach. Now, the ashes obviously are not a fire. The ashes are from yesterday's burning. And they were piled together in the center of the Mizbeach. But now we need more fuel for today. Okay, so the Mishnah is going to be describing how we're going to take wood up and use wood up as fuel. But basically we're going to have to create bonfires on the Mizbeach. How many bonfires were there on the Mizbeach?
Three.
So the best answer you can always say is machlokas. Okay, it really is, I know it sounds funny, but there really is a machlokas in terms of how many bonfires there were on the Mizbeach. In our Mishnah over here, I think after we get through this Mishnah, I think you'll only be counting two. For our intents and purposes, let's assume three. Right? That's the Rambam goes with three. That seems to be the quote-unquote accepted position. We'll find out. B'mir b'yamenu. So, but let's say there are three bonfires on the top of the Mizbeach. Okay, the main bonfire, right, the Ma'aracha. Ma'aracha Ne'arach just simply means it was organized. Right? It was an organized bonfire. Not unlike... the one we had a couple nights ago here at the shul. It was somewhat organized. So, Ma'aracha, so there was the main bonfire, which is where you're going to be burning all of today's karbanos. Okay. And as we're going to point out, again, the Mishnah is going to describe all this. I just want to overview this. That's going to be to the east side of the ashes. There's going to be kind of like almost like a reserve bonfire, meaning another bonfire that's created in the event the main bonfire needs a little more fuel, needs some more coals. We're going to set up a second bonfire, like almost like a reserve bonfire, right? So that there will be a constant fire on the Mizbeach. Remember, one of our basic rules when it comes to fires on the Mizbeach, lo suka, esh Mizbeach, lo sukad, sorry, lo sichbe. Right, there should never be extinguished, meaning there should always be some sort of continuous fire going on in the Mizbeach. And then there was a third bonfire in the Mizbeach. Why do we have a third bonfire in the Mizbeach? So we have our main, we have our reserve. What's that for? Ketores. Meaning that every day we need fuel, fire, to burn the Ketores. Where's the Ketores burnt? Not on the outer Mizbeach. The Ketores is burnt on the, that's correct, the Mizbeach HaKetores. The Mizbeach inside the Beit HaMikdash, inside the actual building itself, where daily the Ketores is going to be burnt. Half in the morning, half in the evening. And then on Yom Kippur, also we're going to have more Ketores burning, and on Yom Kippur we're going to be burning Ketores in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Okay, so we need a separate fire for the burning of the Ketores, so that means daily the Kohen would be walking up the ramp, taking from this Ketores fire, bringing that coal down, this hot coal, and now putting it into the Mizbeach HaKetores, on top of the Mizbeach HaKetores, and that's where the Ketores is burned. So, basically now, I've counted for us three bonfires that are set up on the Mizbeach. You'll see from the Mishnah never uses the number three. It's unclear from our Mishnah exactly how many there are, but I'm laying it out as the Rambam would describe it. Okay. We are now in the Mishnah, Chav Tetzam and Aleph, we're in the very top. So they would take up the logs. The logs in the Mishnah are called Gezirin. The word Gezirin means cut. They weren't just simply logs. In other words, but they were shaped and they were smoothed out. They looked like blocks of wood. They were shaped in terms of blocks of wood, and they were put up onto the Mizbeach. Daily, there was at least two blocks of wood that were put up on the Mizbeach. If they needed more, they brought up more, but that was the minimum. Now the Mishnah is funny over here. The Mishnah is going to have like a little give and take, like almost like Gemara like talk. And that we're going to have a question, we're going to have an answer. So is all wood acceptable? And the Mishnah's answer to its own question is hain. Yeah, sure, any wood you want. I'll tell you, however, which woods are not good. The woods come off the vine of a grape. Right, grapevine, vishal zayis, and wood that comes off the tree of olives. Okay, they're not good. Aval be'ela yirigilim b'merbi yoshel te'ena. But which woods did they used to use? Meaning, even though we said that all woods are acceptable, but there was preferred wood. So what was the preferred wood? Te'ena, fig tree wood. Shel egos, walnut wood. Right? Vishal eitz shemen. And oil wood. Now it's not olive oil wood because the Mishnah, just a couple of lines ago, told us that the olive tree was not good. So when it says eitz shemen, what is it referring to? I do not know specifically what kind of olive wood it's referring to. V'sirz ha-maracha gedola, and they set up now the maracha gedola. So this is now our main maracha. As I mentioned, it's to the east of the mizbeach. To the east of the pile of ashes. The Mishnah says exactly that. Mizracha, it was to the east of the pile of ashes. V'chazisa Mizracha. Here's a challenging line of Mishnah. And its chazisa was to the east. Okay? What's a chazisa? Okay. Now I'll read the Rush, not because I understand it, but I'll read it. V'chazisa osa b'maracha k'min chalon l'tzad Mizrach. So this bonfire had a window, and the window was facing to the east. I don't know what that means. Meaning, I guess if I were more of a Boy Scout, and I understood better how bonfires were made, I would understand what the window of a bonfire is. Okay? I'm here to tell you I don't. But, right, and he quotes the Targum, Vayar v'chazeh l'kach karin ha'chalon chazos. Okay, so windows in Aramaic are called chazos. Right? We know chazeh means to see, right? Chazon Yishayahu. Okay, so it was apparently, again, if I knew bonfires better, I'd understand this. There was a window to the bonfire. So the bonfire, the main bonfire, was to the east of the ashes on the top of the Mizbeach, and the window to this bonfire was to the east. It was so close to the ashes that the logs of this main bonfire actually touched the pile of ashes. And there was space between the actual blocks of wood, right? This I do know. Okay, again, my Boy Scout skills are limited, but this I do know. In other words, you can't put the blocks one right next to another. You need a little bit of air. You need oxygen. So they were spaced out, and you put the alisa, a little bit of kindling, between the wood so that you'd light the kindling, and then that would light these big blocks of wood. Shayu matzitsa nes alisa. Misham baru, misham atse te'ena yafim. Okay, and they chose atse te'ena yafim, good fig trees for this. Okay. Sider es amaracha hashnia la kitaris. Now, there's a second bonfire, which is for the kitaris. This is now the second bonfire being described in Amish and Tamid, which was exclusively for the kitaris. Keneged, now where was this place? Ma'arav Hizdromus. On the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. Now, not all the way in the corner. Remember, we need Kohanim to be able to walk around the top of the Mizbeach. So it was not exactly in the corner, says the Mishnah, Mishoch Menakaren Kalpit Safon Arba Amos. 4 amos away from the southwest corner, meaning 4 amos north. Now, it is, of course, a little bit interior as well, meaning it's not all the way on the west end of the Mizbech, because we want the Kohanim to be able to walk around the west side as well. But in other words, why is the Mishnah here focusing on 4 amas from the south end? So the Rush says all this is very specific for the following reason. Now, do I go through the whole Rush? Yeah, let me go through the whole Rush inside. We have time, and it's important. Where exactly was the Mizbech placed in terms of the Azar, in terms of the temple courtyard? This is a bit of a moving target. Right, is it correct? Again, once again, the correct answer is, unfortunately, Machlokas. It's not 100% clear where the Mizbeach was placed. I'll point you to the Rambam's notebook. Right, in the back of our Gemaras, you're going to find the Rambam actually drew a picture of the Bais Sheni of the Second Temple. And it seems that these are the actual drawings of the Rambam, and in it, so he has, right, it's 3 pages. It's all we have, 3 pages of his notebook. So in it, he has the Mizbeach all the way on the southern side of the Azara, right? You see, I know, not right. We have now much fancier, right? We have much fancier pictures. Oh, even our fancy pictures. Yeah, we have it all the way in the south side of the Mizbeach. Okay, so that's how the Rambam has it. So I would say to you, for our discussion, ignore. I mean, obviously, don't ignore it. But in other words, it's not gonna make sense based on what we're about to say. Okay, but anyway, should note that that's how the Rambam has it, all the way in the south side of the Mizbeach. Okay.
Sometimes we had it in the middle.
Sometimes we had it in the middle, and some people put it up north. Let's, for purposes of our discussion, let's put it now towards the north. Right. So the Rush writes like this. Likach mimenu, I'm in the Rush now. Lekitaris likach mimenu gachom lehachnisam lifnim ala mizbech hazav lagtir alav. Right, we're going to take these coals. Now we're talking about the second pile of fire, second bonfire in the mizbech, to burn on the mizbech hazav, on the golden mizbech, which is in the base of Mikdash. Lahatir alav. Alamitzarech marach acheres gachalam alalu. Why do I need a second bonfire? Why not just simply go to the original bonfire, the quote unquote the main bonfire? So the Rush says, v'lo hayulochim imarach gedola. So he says, go to the 5th parak of Yuma for drushas for that. Mikra hi ha'olah mokdal mizbech ha'olah zumarach gedola ve'ish ha'mizbech tukarbo zumarach ha'shnir shokataris. Okay, so the Rosh says it's just based on, according to the Gemara and Yuma, it's drashas. Drashas teach us that we need a second bonfire for the coals for the kataris, to burn the incense. Now let's go to the next Rosh. Keneged Karen Maravish Ramis. It's placed in the southwest corner. Why? She samuch lekevish dichsiv b'ketoris yom kippur and v'lakach mela machta gach le'esh me'al ha'mizbech me'lifnei Hashem. So in terms of identifying where its location is, one of our prime clues is going to be when the Torah describes the coals of Yom Kippur, it says me'lifnei Hashem, they have to face God. What does that mean, face God? Meaning they have to be as proximate, as close to the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? Klomar, makom shu samuch lifnei Hashem, umine yalfinant kitares de olas tamid. Now, mishoch menakeren kalpitzaf on one more rush. And the rush writes like this, dalet amos mefarsh beper kashe kadoshim. Why specifically four amos from the southern end? We did this earlier in Daf Yomi, but we get to review. The Savar Haitana, because the author of the Mishnah of Tamid, what we're learning right now, maintains the following. The Kulam is Be'ech B'Tzafon. Unlike what the Rambam drew and illustrated for us, our Tana is of the opinion that the Mizbech was totally in the northern section of the courtyard. I'm sorry, B'Tzafon HaZarakai. V'ayasof HaMizbech Keneged Chetzef Shal Pesach HaEicha. Now, the southern end of the Mizbeach can be found on the 50-yard line. You'll forgive the terrible sports analogy, but it's right in the middle. Okay? So now we have a center line running up the Azara, meaning separating the north from the south, right? And so now you're going to find, and there's a picture, right? There's a picture over there? Okay, good. And you're going to find the southern end of the Mizbeach right on that line. And so now, he goes through the specifics. Chetzav shal pesach ha'echo. U pesach haya heimos b'tzafon v'heimos b'darim. Now the entrance of the heichal was 10 amos wide. Now there was an ulam in front of that, but we're not talking about the ulam right now. The ulam was a huge entrance, 20 by 40. But we're just talking about the entrance to the Heichal. It's 10 Amos. So obviously 5 of the entrance is in the north, and the 5 of the Amos are to the south. Okay, so basically now, we have 5 Amos worth to work with. Dal Amos Shemarchik Menakaren Hein Ami Yisod. Now, remember, the Mizbech was block on top of block on top of block. So, One Amma is Yisod. V'ama Rochev, V'ama Yisod, Amma Rochev, Ama Karen va'ama makom hiloch regleh akohanim. So just for the structure of the mizbeach, one for the yisod, one for the rochav, one for the horn. That's just the simple structure of the mizbeach that already takes up 3 amos, and we need one more ama on the top of the mizbeach to allow kohanim to walk. That already takes up now 4. We only have 1 ama left that runs parallel with the entrance of the heichal. That's where we want the bonfire to be. Nishar adayin ama keneged pesach v'im hayu marchik yoser lo hava lifnei Hashem. And if I were to put that bonfire one more ama north of where we just described, it will no longer be lifnei Hashem. It's true on an angle it'll be lifnei Hashem, but what we want is on a parallel line to be lifnei Hashem, so that it actually sees directly into the Heichal. Okay. The details of the Dal Amos. Back to the Mishnah. Ba'omid Chamesh Sa'im Gachalim. So approximately 5 Sa'as of coals, meaning that's how much coals we want on this Ketoros, that's going to be enough to burn the incense. And now v'Shabbos ba'omeid shmonasayim gachalim. Now on Shabbos we would like 3 more. We would like 8. Why on Shabbos do we need more coals over here? Sheshamayu nosnim shnei b'zich levana shal lechem apanim. Because you know on Shabbos we're going to be taking off the lechem apanim. Now the lechem apanim, the 12 loaves of bread that were baked weekly, distributed to the Kohanim on Shabbos. So those 12 loaves of bread, in order to be eaten by the Kohanim, so they needed a matir. What was a matir of the lechem upon him? It was 2 spoonfuls of Lavona. And they were burnt on this little bonfire. And so therefore we wanted extra coals. Now we would return. Okay, so now we're all set up. Meaning every morning they would do this. Heap up the ashes into the middle. Set up the main bonfire to the east of the ashes. Set up now the Mishnah here doesn't breathe a word of this. But, right, as we saw this together in the rush. Set up another bonfire to the, as a reserve. Right, for the main. Set up a third bonfire, although the Mishnah here describes it as the second. Set up a second or third bonfire for the Ketores, and those are your 3 bonfires that are set up every single morning. Now we're ready. Now we can take yesterday's limbs and fats that weren't burned, and we can put them back on the bonfire. Which one? The main. The main bonfire, which was to the east. And now that was done, and now all the Kohanim would retreat to the Lishkas Hagazis. Lishkas Hagazis, that's where the Sanhedrin sat, and they would go to the Lishkas Hagazis now, and stay tuned for the next parak, and in terms of what comes up next, we have, right, that sets us up for the next chapter. Okay, we have Gemara. We're going to start some Gemara. Okay, I think I misspoke yesterday. I think I was wrong yesterday. I said there was no Gemara in the second parak. There is Gemara in the second parak. Okay, and is this going to be it? I think. Don't say it. I'll say it. I think this is it. I think this is the last bit of Gemara that we're going to see. Meaning, from this point forward, right, third parak, fourth parak, I think it's just going to be Mishnayos. All right. Good. I could be wrong. We'll see. But I think this is it. I think this is the last of our Gemara. And that means just in case I'm right. In the event, that means that we're not going to see Gemara again for all Seder Kachem. Because we have Tamid, we have Midos. Midos is 0 Gemara. And this will be it. This will be the last of the Gemara. Don't worry, we'll have more Gemara to do before we finish Shas. You know what I mean. We have Masechta Nida. Okay, where am I? Here we go. Amar Rava. Okay? And the Gemara starts off over here with the following comment. Which is simple. Guzma. That's it. Guzma. It's an exaggeration. Okay? In Israel, you hear that word thrown around a lot amongst our brethren. So, tamakzim, right? It's a lot of exaggeration. So, guzma, so that's our Mishnah's exaggerating, right? In other words, our Mishnah speaks at times hyperbolically. And I'll give you other example, says Rava, of guzma. Right, we have a Mishnah coming up later on in Masechta in which they would have the animals drink water. They would hydrate their animals. Now, apparently one of the reasons that this was done is because when a hydrated animal is shechted, it's easier to take the skin off the animal of a hydrated animal. Okay, again, I have no experience on this, but I'll take the Mefarshim for their at face value. So good, so they would hydrate the animal. So what would they use? So nice styrofoam cups that were disposable? Of course not. We're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. They would use golden cups. And so they would serve water to the animals in golden cups. So Rava on that Mishnah says, Guzma. That's an exaggeration. Really. And you're going to see this in a lot of different places. You're going to see it in Chumash. You're going to see it in Navi. You're going to see it in Divrei Chachamim, in Mishnayos. Meaning that there is a little bit of a hyperbole that's used. Okay? Obviously, you've got to treat this delicately. It's a delicate topic. Meaning, when we can assume that the Mishnah is not meant to be taken literally. But there are times. And we go through them. When describing the cities in Eretz Yisrael, right? And this is really the Meraglim's description of it. And remember, they wanted to give a very exaggerated version of what Eretz Yisrael looks like. They said that the walls that surround the cities, and the walls go up to the heavens. What a perspective. Uvitzoros b'shamayim. B'shamayim saka da'atcha. Now, do you think that ela guzma? Now, that's an exaggeration. Okay, we can quibble a little bit about this, because this is, I know it's in the Chumash, but this is not the Torah describing, this is the Torah telling us how the spies are describing the city. So, you understand, it's not
right.
It's not really the Torah's description, it's a perspective. Right? One of fear, obviously. Dibur Chacham in Lashon Havai Hadamaron. Where do we see that the Mishnah said that the Chachamim spoke in hyperbole? So, we're right here. Meaning, this is why we're having the discussion right now, because we're reading a Mishnah in Masechta Tamid that describes a little bit of hyperbole. 300 core of ashes on the top of the Mizbech, it can't be. That number's too big. What do we say, over 1 million eggs? Okay. So, Vihishku is a Tamid Bekoshal Zahav. And also, giving the animals, the carbon tamid, obviously before we shecht it, giving it water to drink from gold cups, that's hyperbolic. Dibur Nevi'im Lashon Havai Dichtiv, and you're going to see this in Navi as well. Mechalim Mechalilim V'tivaka Aretz L'kolam. The earth shook from the flutes that were being played. Okay, did the earth really shake? Meaning, was there like an earthquake? Okay.
Where was it?
Describing the dedication of the first temple.
Oh,
okay. Amar Rabbi Yanai. Okay. Amar Rabbi Yanai. Bar Nachmeni Amar Shmuel B'Shoshim Mekamas Dibur Chacham B'Lashon Havai Ve'Elohein. Now I can actually point to three Mishnayos that describe exaggeration. It's number one, Tapuach, yeah. Our Mishnah. Number two, Geffen. We're going to see what that is in just a moment. And number three, Paroches. Now, Lafuke Midrava. Now, this statement that was quoted by Rabbi Yana Bar Nachmeni in the name of Shmuel obviously disagrees with Rava. Because Rava would count a fourth, and Rava would count the hydration of the animals from golden cups. So Rava thought that was an exaggeration, and the Gemara quotes the name of Shmuel. That's not an exaggeration. Did not, in fact, He disagrees. He says that that's not an exaggeration. Meaning, we say this concept very often, that in the Beis HaMikdash, they did not act like poor people. Meaning, the Beis HaMikdash was a makam kavod. It was a place where they had a lot of honor. Right? They were not cheap. And when the Mishnah describes how they actually had excuse me, gold cups, and the animals were drinking from gold cups. You could take that literally. Yeah, gold cups. Now, Tapuach, now let's go through the three Mishnayos where Shmuel believes that these Mishnayos are Guzma. Number one, Tapuach HaDamaran. So that's our Mishnah. We've covered that. Number two, Geffen, Detanya, Geffen, Zahav, Haitha, Omeres, HaPesach, HaHechal, Umadle, Algabe, Klunsos. There was Geffen, Zahav, golden vine. Golden vine? Meaning a vine that was molded out of gold. Meaning it was shaped like a vine. And it stood by the entrance of the Hechel, and it was held up by poles. I guess we could ask the same question that the Gemara asked in the beginning of today's daf. Right? Wooden poles, can't be, Asherah, Kol Eitz. Anyway. Now somebody who wants to donate gold to the Beis HaMikdash, so O Gargir, O Eshkol, maybe Vitola Ba, they would hang it on these the golden vines. Okay? Amra Velazbar Tzedek Masa Haya Benimno Allah Shosh Meos Kohanim Lifnosa. One time it took 300 Kohanim in order to take down all the gold, and he believes that that was an exaggeration. I mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. It's almost like the Mishnah has like a little secret code to tell us that it's an exaggeration, and the code is 300. 300 is like Mishnah code that to tell us that don't take this literally, it's an exaggeration. 300 core of ashes on the type of the pile of Mizbeach. 300 Kohanim in order to remove all the gold that was laden on top of the golden vine. And, just to be consistent, Dinan and Paroches. Now we're going to talk about the Paroches. Now the Paroches was a curtain that separated the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer Mishum, Rabbi Shimon Haskan Paroches Aviyaha Tefach. Now, I want to say this is the Mishnah in Shkalim. Yes. Nice. I just did the Mishnah with my son, so That's now ask me which parak it is. I don't remember. Okay. Eight parakim altogether. In Shkala. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon Azgan Parochas Avia Tafach. So the thickness of this parochas was one tafach thick. That's about 4 inches thick. This is fabric. Fabric that was 4 inches thick. Al Shivushnaim Neman Neregis. Now it was made out of string that was a composite of 71. And each string that made up the 71, Vakol Nima Venima, Esen Varba Chutim, was made up of 24 strings themselves. So it was a very thick material. Archa Arba Im Ama Virachva Esrim Ama. It was 20 by 40. The total length and width of this parochis was 20 by 40. Omishmonim Ushtaim Ribui Nases. Now, if you add everything up together, it comes up to 82 times 10,000, 820,000 strings. Ribunases Ushtaim Osim B'chol Shana V'Shana. They made two every year. Two were made up every year. Now, exactly what that means, meaning that they wore it, 6 months it wore down. 6 months it got dirty. I'm not really sure, but two were made every year. Ushlosh Be'os Konim Matbila. So now, if it ever was subject to becoming tamei, so it took 300 kohanim to tovel it in the mikvah. And once again, right, consistent. It really is consistent, is that when you see the number 300, that's code for, that's like the Chachamim's code for us, Guzma, that's an exaggeration.
What? There's not room for
300
kohanim.
Not room for 300 kohanim.
What about 40 says of what to dump this in?
Right, and you needed a pool large enough to dump this in as well. That's also hard to imagine. Right, comment by the Vilna Gaon. It's a popular comment. I bet you anything he has it in the notes. I'd bet a lot on that. But it's a popular comment by the Gra. He says that it is 300 kohanim is a very specific number. I know the Mishnah the Gemara just simply said Guzma, but if you take the perimeter of the paroches, what did we just say? It's 20 by 40 amos. Okay, an amos, how many tzvachim? So you're going to say six to me, and six is a good answer, but in this case it's not correct. Five is the correct answer, because for the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, they dealt with a five tefachama, not a six tefachama. So what's the perimeter? It's 20 by 40, 20 and 40, so the perimeter is a total of 120. Right, you with me? Right, 20, 20, 20, 40, 40. So the perimeter is 120, 120 times five. 600. Okay, so that's 600 tefachim. So how much is a tefach? One hand. Right. So kohanim put two hands on. So 300 of those kohanim are going to make up the full 600 tefachim of the perimeter of the parochas. Now it could be that the Gaon's comment is correct and the Gemara is correct in that it's an exaggeration for the point that you made, Aaron, meaning side by... The kohanim can't actually stand side by side. That would be a neat trick. But it is at least from a, just for a linear perspective, it is possible for 300 kohanim to be actually holding on to the 600 tfachim of linear space that made up the perimeter of the parochas. Give me a moment. If I find the rush, great. If not, we'll just move along.
Where's the
Gaon?
It's on this.
No, the Gaon's not going to be here. The Gaon, just from being around, I know this Gaon.
Right.
You're right. I can't tell you where to find this Gaon.
I think you said it last time.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. You know. Anyway, there. Look at the Rush. I found it on the side of the Gemara, second to last narrow line. So we would tovel the paroches. The Rush writes in nitmes. If the paroches becomes tameh, the tema. And the Rush says, and I have the following question. V'halo eina mekabeles tuma. There's a Rush's question. He's a Rishon. Yeah, how does it become Tumet?
Not by
share.
It's going to be a Zelvers.
De chashiva mechuberes ke'echa midafne habayish. Remember now, this curtain over here acted as a wall. Now, not this room, but if you walk over one more room, so we have movable walls over here. Good. But it's a wall. Meaning, okay, the wall's movable. But it's a wall. And once it's a wall, now it's considered part of the house. And if it's considered part of the house, it's considered karka. And if it's karka, it's not mekabel tuma. So the Rush is just curious. I'd like to know. So So Me'achem Edafni Abayis. Now Mimim Maseches Yom Tov. He quotes the Gemara Mimnei Ma Amru Vilon Tamei Mimnei Shem Hashamish Shem Sorry Shem Hashamish Mechamen Kenego. Meaning that the Gemara in Beitza talks about how like curtains for a window. They're Mekabel Tumah, but only because the Shamash sometimes, when it gets really cold, so he wraps himself up in the curtain. In other words, it's used for other purposes. But Halav Hachi, Lo Hayam Mekabel Tumah. So, but if it's just part of the structure of the house, it's not Mekabel Tumah. V'aytam Lo Shaych Hacha. And so over here, it should not be Mekabel Tumah. So the Yesh Lamar so suggests the Rush. It could be that this tvil over here is not to be mitarid if it becomes tame, says the Rush. Maybe it never becomes tame, but it could be that just simply after you make kelim for the Beis Hamikdash as part of the inauguration, and it's because it's going to be used b'kodesh, it requires tefillah. Not tefillah to remove tumah, but tefillah as a hachana, so that it could be used by Kodesh. And the Rush suggests maybe that's the tefillah that we're talking about over here. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up at the two dots.